Chapter 4. The depot was a maze. Thousands of cargo carriages were linked together and just left when they were no longer of use, creating artificial alleyways and thoroughfares out of the few tracks that remained unladen. It was through one of these that the leg platoon now ventured, hemmed in on both sides by an unbroken chain of crates and cars. The route had been chosen to force any enemy to approach them head-on, a death wish for infantry fighting against armour. While it was true that the Corvids could set up an ambush from inside the railway containers, the reality was that they were made of cheap, low-grade steel. They offered no protection against the kind of firepower carried by mechs and power suits. Any ambush would be short-lived, and the armed civilians didn't seem willing to throw their lives away, if recent experience was anything to go by. The heavy units could see above the level of containers, and the whole area was generally open from a certain height. It had made sense to come this way. None of that mattered to Kinney, now ruminating over what Sergeant Kronig had said to him. Had it been another threat? He wasn't above it. Kinney was still bothered by the last time Kronig had threatened to harm him. But the tone he had used just sounded disappointed. Maybe he just saw something in Kinney that he didn't like. The fear, he had called it, in one of the rare times they had managed to get him to talk about the troubles. When a soldier first meets combat, in that first moment when rounds start to fly on a two-way range, he feels that momentary pause of disbelief and decides there and then how it will affect him. After that point, regardless of what he says to the contrary, you can see it in his eyes, Kronig had said. They might drag themselves out on patrol every time, they might even fight, but their heart won't be in it. It was the lack of commitment that got you killed. War isn't something that happens to you, he remembered Kronig growling in a way that seemed so trivial and cheesy at the time. You have to participate willingly. Kinney tried to focus on his faint reflection in the forward display, but to no avail. Do I have the fear in me? He thought to himself. Maybe it's just a twisted old man, warped by his experiences, talking shit. A low rumbling pulled him out of this reflection. There was no noise. Instead, he felt it through the metal feet of his suit. It wasn't the definitive stomp of heavy armor, but something older, more primal. It came as much from antiquated power plants as it did from treads on the ground. Tanks! Kinney didn't know who the call came from, but he could just make out squat shapes up ahead through the gap in Eddie's armored legs. He increased the gain, and the blocky things could be seen rolling up on them, three abreast, grinding along the old railway tracks. They were a hodgepodge of reclaimed wrecks and outdated surplus, retrofitted with ablative plating, hastily welded in place to cover vulnerabilities in the ancient hulls. Black smoke bellowed from exhausts, and the roar of engines reverberated up and down the rows and rows of old container carriages. Too far away for the mugs to engage, Kinney worried over this fact, right about the time they opened fire. Three elevated cannons boomed, almost in unison, barrels spitting tongues of flame 10 feet long as shells screamed through the air. Behind them another three tanks followed, a tactical bound behind, and fired in the next second. The sky was filled with deadly, explosive shells, designed to wreck the armor of tanks and mechs with extreme violence, punching through their hulls and mincing the crew members within. Colonel Rome took the full force of the fusillade across his frontage. Explosions blossomed against hard shields, brilliant blue coronas of light competing with greasy fireballs as anti-armor rounds detonated prematurely. Wolfmother didn't even slow down. The huge machine fired its own cannon in response as it strode through rolling balls of flame. The armor-piercing sabot that exited the barrel left a shockwave in its wake that picked up gravel and dirt, flinging it against the clustered containers in a hailstorm of shrapnel. This shell struck the first tank square on its glacis plate. It flipped backwards into the air, still being carried by its forward momentum, before crashing down onto the upper section of its turret. The whole superstructure, unable to endure the forces exerted upon it, simply crumpled, as though trodden on by a giant. Straight away, the munitions contained inside the tank's magazine went up, producing a mushroom cloud 100 feet high. Kinney swore he felt the blast of heat inside his cockpit. Recognizing that they had severely underestimated the threat, the remaining two tanks of the front rank slewed to a halt on squealing treads. Waves of burning matter rolled over them, struggling to find purchase as they inadvertently polished the old railway tracks. The first one dipped slightly into the blackened crater left by its comrade and promptly got stuck, rapidly elevating its barrel in an attempt to fire upon Wolfmother again. The second of the tanks slammed into reverse and began to retreat, firing all of its weapons. Somebody in second squad cried out in alarm, but it was lost in the noise as the remaining tanks opened up with turret machine guns and power suit shields flared.
"Get out of the way!"
Colonel Rome roared over the radio. The squad of Mogs broke down the center, scrambling out of the way as Wolfmother stormed through their position, picking up speed. The reversing tank shuddered as a tungsten slug punched clean through it, then simply disappeared in an expanding ball of flame and fragmentation as the heavy mech fired again. Tank number 3 still had a track caught in the crater inhabited by its dead buddy, and swerved back and forth with futility as its engine threatened to blow with the effort. Wolfmother, now several hundred yards ahead of the front of the platoon, reached it. A solid foot stamped down hard against upper armor, which buckled under the impact. The tank's barrel sheared off completely, tumbling away from the damaged turret as Wolfmother raised its foot and drove it down again. Kinney could hear the screech of tortured metal 1,000 yards away from him as tons of armor was crushed flat under the might of one of the army's finest fighting machines. The second round of tanks was now in full retreat, still firing haphazardly. HE rounds whipped past the heavy mech, all firing discipline lost now as the rebels discovered they had bitten off more than they could chew. They couldn't be allowed to get away.
"Eddie, get that artillery up. 1,000 yards, 2 volleys, narrow spread."
It was then that Kinney heard something, a high-pitched whine, like small engines being pushed to the limit.
"Contact rear!"
he yelled over the squad net as the first biker raced past, dousing Bader's Mog in liquid flame. The power suit went up like a torch. For some reason, his hard shield didn't register the fire as a threat, and the whole machine was turned into a walking pyre. Bader reacted by firing wildly down the track, streams of tracer wickering across the space, churning up concrete and punching jagged holes in container boxes. The whole squad had missed it, being distracted by the excitement occurring up ahead, and they'd been caught off guard. The bikes were big, dedicated attack bikes, much like those used by the Army's Outrider squadrons, but even older. Even though they looked like they were about to fall apart at any minute, they were heavily armed with a mix of cannon, MGs, and flamethrowers, and there were dozens of them. "Are you okay, Bader?" Kinney's almost softly spoken question was immediately drowned out by radio chatter.
"Grayson, watch the left. Spread out, don't bunch up. Make yourselves harder targets for these bastards."
"I'm fucking trying. The damn things turn so slow."
From the sea of voices came a cry of pure terror. Bader's.
"Somebody help me!"
Kinney froze again, fingers paralyzed over triggers as Bader's scream echoed in his mind. "I shouldn't be here." He tried to fight the rising tide of panic, but ended up thinking about his brother and how he could be out there. He might be one of those bikers. He could already be crushed beneath Wolfmother's armored tread, for all Kinney knew. His thoughts were flickering across these scenarios when Corporal Nito's gutted Mog appeared unbidden, and something deeper stirred within him, straining against the flimsy membrane of his consciousness. Reynolds' eyes focused again on Bader's cockpit, engulfed in flame. Something inside him tore free. What was an eternity in his mind had lasted no more than a second. Both barrels let rip, and his rounds kicked up plumes of debris as they tracked the Corvid bike bearing down on him. It jinked to one side with a practiced ease, and fired its own machine guns in reply. Rounds crackled against his shield and Kinney adjusted behind flickering blue. But the bike was passed and he spun around with effort, strafing gunfire all the while.
"Pay attention! You're hitting Eddie!"
Kronig bellowed, and Kinney watched as the bike weaved between the heavy mech's legs. Tiny blue ripples spread across the invisible shield surface like water around Eddie's legs, as it moved to actually avoid stepping on the bike.
He's using it as cover, Kinney thought. But before he could adapt, a bone-jarring impact slammed into the rear of his armor.
Where's my rear protection, First Squad? Blake demanded over the net.
We're engaging multiple attack bikes now, closing fast, Kronig reported flatly. Kinney yowled in pure frustration, cancelling the flashing warning icons on his display before swinging his power suit round again. He could make out small arms fire from the middle of the platoon, Third Squad engaging the bikes now too.
Aim low, ambush the bastards, Kronig ordered, before demonstrating with an on-point shot from his autocannon.
Please help me,
wailed Bader, less coherent this time. Kinney couldn't make him out now, just a beacon of yellow flame. Kronig's 25mm shell blew out a bike cockpit in an explosion of plexiglass that catapulted the ragdoll form of its rider through the air. The spinning wreckage of the bike tumbled, disintegrating at speed as it flew into the Mog's position. Kinney neatly sidestepped as it skidded past, before laying down fire onto a pair of bikes fast approaching. Both vehicles shuddered, shedding vast chunks of fairing, and slammed into each other. Kinney gritted his teeth as the MGs rattled away, recoil vibrating through his entire suit. One bike triggered the flamethrowers in the midst of its death tumble, coating the side of a Mog in burning napalm as it fired at depth positions. Kinney would never know whether it was through a weakness in his ammo feed or a crack in the hopper, but Grayson's ammunition started cooking off. 25mm light cannon rounds blasted huge chunks from his hull. The Mog jerked like a drunk puppeteer's marionette. Grayson flailed ineffectually before an explosion finally engulfed him. Meanwhile, Bader's Mog had slumped against a cargo container where it still burned, and Braga and Kinney sprayed up and down the road in long bursts, verging on frenzy. The left leg of his suit twitched almost uncontrollably, and Kinney wrestled mentally with his systems to calm it down as he adjusted aim and mashed triggers hard. Get to Bader. Come on, take these guys out. Is he even still alive? Kinney fired a burst at another bike, shredding its front tire and causing it to clip a railway sleeper and spin wildly to one side. The bike was still firing when Braga finished it off, before switching to trade fire with a bike that mounted a light cannon. It pumped shots at Braga, causing his hard shield to overload, popping with that familiar stink as he returned fire with both barrels. Rounds sparked from his Mog's frontal plating and he staggered, but armor held, and Braga shredded the bike with a relentless hail of 8mm slugs. Kronig swung his power suit round in a vicious arc as a bike attempted to pass, slamming the front wheel with his right weapon arm. Both bike and driver cartwheeled into the air, which the sergeant tracked for a moment before turning back to the rear. Braga and Kinney bracketed another pair of bikers between them, causing one to careen straight into a comrade's wreckage, igniting in a fireball that could have only been caused by high-octane fuel. The other just came to a stop and fell over, rider nowhere to be seen. Kinney swept his guns to another bike, locking it in his sights and adjusting low to allow for the speed as it approached. The entire forward section of the bike strobed suddenly from red to white, gun barrels wilting as the main armor plate was scoured clean of paint and grime. A moment later, the tire exploded, dropping the front forks into the ground. As the metal drove downwards, it simply collapsed into itself like hot wax, one of the front stanchions offering the only resistance. The rest of the bike pinwheeled sideways with enough momentum to keep it spinning through its own metal slurry before grinding to a halt. What remained was a half-melted frame in a puddle of sputtering slag, the non-metal components on fire. Kinetic beam. He looked around to see Eddie stood watching them, auxiliary weapon pointed in their direction. Kinney could smell burning meat as he blinked sweat out of his eyes, and he snarled as he searched for further targets, muscles and joints aching as he forced the machine to match his movements. His ears were ringing, even with the noise-cancelling effect of the Mog systems, and his arms throbbed from the constant recoil of sustained machine gun fire. Even when it was keeping him alive, M841 was beating the hell out of him. The attack had slackened off for the time being. They had given the Separatists a bloody nose, though eyeing his ammo counters, Kinney doubted they could weather many more attacks like that. "We need to help Bader," Kinney blurted, searching frantically for his friend. The Mog had somehow fallen into a seated position,
and its blackened hull smouldered with the remains of burning fuel.
Negative. Braga, cover us. Kinney, help me kick these bikes across the tracks. We need to limit their mobility.
Braga confirmed the order, but Kinney hesitated at first. Every moment counted for Bader, and instead they were shoring up defenses they might not even need. Kronig's threat from that morning loomed heavily, and he knew the man had no tolerance for insubordination.
Roger, said Kinney, as he moved towards the closest bike husk.
Fuck you, Kronig.
In short order, they managed to close off most of the open space, while leaving a large enough gap at one side, should they suddenly need to double back.
First squad, sit rep,
Kronig said, audibly out of breath after kicking attack bikes around.
Braga, 55% ammo remaining, no shields, I'm still green.
Kinney bounded towards the down mog.
Kinney, 70% ammo, 60% shields, I'm green. We need to help Bader.
He reached the charred power suit. A scream sounded over the squad net.
Roger, 800 yards, two volleys, narrow spread. Shot, over.
Blake did the mental calculation and gently squeezed the trigger. Her cockpit shuddered as the quad-barrel cannon mounted upon her hull belched flame, lobbing rounds in a low arc over Wolfmother's position. She let 2 seconds pass and squeezed the trigger again.
Tanks, Blake thought, somewhat alarmed.
In Nara's name, how did the Corvids get tanks?
It was obvious how they got into her sector. They had free reign of the district since the gate power had been sabotaged, but how they even procured them in the first place just raised more questions. Still, these particular tanks wouldn't last very long, and Blake felt a sense of redemption as she shifted position. There had been no hesitation this time. She had simply fallen back on her training and reacted automatically to the fire mission. She stepped to one side, crushing a cargo container in the process. Blake had to see. She needed to see the first shot she'd ever fired in anger. She managed to catch the impacts through Eddie's display. The first volley touched dirt in front of the fleeing tank's direction of travel and blasted columns of shattered concrete and muck straight up, disintegrating containers on both sides of the tracks. The tank slammed on the brakes and rolled into the quagmire of twisted sections of railway and falling debris. The second volley dropped directly onto their heads. All three tanks burst apart as though they had been constructed of dry twigs. Secondary explosions rippled as they split into pieces, and Blake let out a small whoop and stepped back onto the thoroughfare, narrowly avoiding stepping on a bike that sped past.
Wait, a bike? Where's my rear protection, first squad? Blake demanded over the net.
We're engaging multiple attack bikes now. Closing fast, Kronig reported flatly.
That was the second time in short order that the old soldier had disappointed her. She was beginning to understand why he hadn't advanced any further in his career. She didn't reply, instead switching to the kinetic bully laser as a second bike sped past. She played the beam across the ground, melting concrete and catching the bike as it jinked in an effort to avoid fire. The rear wheel assembly was instantly turned into molten slag, and the bike tried to melt itself to the ground, failed, and simply spun on the spot. Blake raised a foot and stamped down, smashing the bike like it was an empty matchbox. She could feel the impact shudder up her leg as the cerebral jack interpreted her machine's actions into neural feedback. It was surprisingly satisfying. Turning her mind from bloodshed, she scanned the flanks as Third Squad bracketed and destroyed the other bike, while Wolfmother stood dangerously exposed out front. She had appreciated the heroics, but there was a gap that could be exploited, and she had to close it up.
Second squad, close the distance. Keep up with Wolfmother. Third squad, watch for gaps in the containers.
She had to regain balance in the formation. As if hearing her, Wolfmother strode out again, seemingly in deliberate mockery of her orders. She opened a channel and was about to order Rome to get the hell back when he beat her to the punch.
Rocket trucks 900 yards, engaging with canister rounds.
She could hear the clunk of auto-loaders switching out rounds in his machine before the signal cut off. Wolfmother was enveloped in fire, multiple rockets slamming into it as the reckless colonel moved to engage once more, and once more his shields held. Blake could barely imagine the heat inside Rome's command pit and wondered how long he could keep taking punishment. Wolfmother's snarling mouth spat flame once again, the canister round a blur in the air as it neared its target. The shell airburst several yards before impact. Blake could see thousands of flechettes expand in a dark cloud, before tearing into the squadron of trucks. Designed for use against light vehicles, the canister round was in effect a giant buckshot cartridge, and would be of minimal use against tanks or other decently protected vehicles. The rocket trucks, however, were shredded into scrap instantly before their payloads blew, still in their tubes. Thunderous booms rippled across the train yard, and Rome didn't let the sound die away before reporting that his sector was clear. Blake spun her heavy on its axis, rotating the upper body to face rear, while the legs remained still. She could see Kronig's squad had taken a beating, and were just mopping up the last remnants of the enemy bike squadron. She pulsed the bully once and took out a single bike for them, before checking flank monitors again. Smoke trails, several rows of containers back, left of axis of advance. The damn containers gave a false sense of security, but in reality offered practically no protection from armoured attack. There was at least another troop strength of tanks rumbling on their position right now. Their guns weren't all that powerful, but shields were finite, and it wouldn't take much to wear them all down. She opened a channel to Rome. "Tighten it up, we got armor on the left," was all she got out, before a scream blared from her internal speakers, filling the cockpit with a wall of sound. "Damn, damn, damn!" Kinney had to eject quickly if he wanted to save his friend. He didn't wait for orders, he just pulled both his arms out of their gauntlets in a practice motion and mashed the red control button on his diagnostic panel. The cockpit punched open, his assault harness clips detached, and he jumped from the mongoose, crossing the few yards to his stricken comrade with hurried strides. He could still hear the amplified scream blaring from his suit radio, and as he approached Bader's Mog he could hear that same scream muffled behind layers of rolled steel plating. He ducked under a smoking weapon arm, and gloved hands fumbled with the emergency release lever situated below the mongoose's armpit. The rubber cover had melted through, and Kinney grit his teeth as he grasped the scalding hot lever, hot enough to hurt through suit gloves, and yanked it hard. The cockpit and thigh plates wheezed open with a sucking sound. Partially melted rubber seals left gummy strings in their wake, and a wave of steam rose from the cockpit. The smell hit him first, that of burnt hair and pork. Resisting the urge to vomit, Kinney stood on the access steps to assess the situation. Without looking at his friend, Kinney reached up and manually cancelled the radio transmission, then reached behind Bader for the personal first aid kit. A mighty crash sounded behind him, followed by multiple reports of heavy weapon fire, but Kinney paid it no heed as he tore open the Velcro pouch and laid it out on the diagnostic panel. Bader was red raw. His skin was blistered and hot to the touch. His screaming was hoarse, more like an agonized groan, and not loud at all when the man was right in front of him, which made it all the worse. Parts of his jacksuit had melted into his skin, including the large metal zip that closed up the front. Kinney could see no way to help Bader without surgery. He grabbed a large dose of analgesic from the medkit and stabbed the auto-injector into Bader's leg. The screaming stopped almost immediately, and Bader grinned at Kinney, blinking through unfocused, bloodshot eyes. "Can you see okay?" he asked. Bader nodded slowly, accompanied by more gunfire that shook the earth around them. Kinney gingerly reached behind Bader's head with one hand to feel for his cerebral jack. The connector had melted to the socket, but the cable was still attached. Kinney wanted to be sick again. Good. That meant he could control his suit, if it worked. Next, the young private grabbed a large dose of combat stims and inserted the cartridge into the auto-injector. There was a chance it could kill him, but he wouldn't get back to base if he couldn't walk under his own steam. There was no way they could remove him from his suit without the proper expertise. He stabbed it into the other leg. Bader's eyes went wide, then the skin of his face split, bleeding in numerous places as his mouth twisted into a snarl. "You good, brother?"
"I'm good, Ulf,"
he yelled into Kinney's face.
"Whatever you're doing, do it fast,"
blared Kronig over external speakers. Kinney couldn't believe that bastard had already written Bader off without trying to help him. Assisting the Mog driver hadn't even entered the squad leader's decision cycle. Greatest generation, my ass.
You need to drive yourself back to base, then we can help you. Can you do that for me? Bader's head lolled before snapping upright. The Mog lurched suddenly, and Kinney nearly fell as Bader shuffled his legs on the spot.
I could do that, little brother, he said, though the pain in his eyes was obvious.
Okay, good. When we get back, I swear on the All Saints that we'll get you some help. He reached up and grabbed the hydraulic rams of Bader's cockpit and jumped down, closing it behind him.
Just follow us. Don't worry about fighting, Kinney shouted before jumping back into his own mongoose.
I can fight, replied his friend.
Wolf Mother, watch my fire, Blake said calmly as she lobbed a salvo to their left flank.
The rounds landed in a horizontal line, booming detonations seeming to chase the tanks as they closed in, weaving a path through the containers. The artillery caused a tremendous amount of damage, flinging carriages around and causing others to burst like ripe metal fruit, but the tanks were too evasive. They had good spacing this time, and all three took their own routes, careful not to get funneled into a choke point.
Seen, replied Rome, as Wolf Mother's main cannon tracked a target.
Muzzle flash speared out as the hypervelocity Sabo found its target, sending a tank skidding sideways before it flipped onto its side. The remaining two didn't slow down. They continued their desperate advance, going hell for leather, and Blake could see why. She tried to lower the elevation of her artillery to fire in a direct roll, but the tanks were too fast, and even as target indicators remained frustratingly out of alignment on her display, the tanks engaged. One shell washed across her shield, blanking out her display momentarily in a broiling wave of blazing yellow. The other missed, and Blake punched out with a bully beam. The tank slowed, being forced to a standstill by the beam, paint bubbling on its frontal armor, and Rome fired again, timing his shot to obliterate the target with deadly accuracy. The last tank fired, and shields flared as Blake reacted on instinct and kicked out, hitting a cargo carriage full force. It lifted into the air, bowed in the middle as it spun twice, and the tank swerved to avoid it. Many tons of metal smashed to earth in an explosion of moldy grain sacks and tortured metal, narrowly missing the Separatist armor. Covered in ancient cargo, the tank nudged forwards to get a line of sight past the mangled train carriage, poking its turret edge out around the corner. Eddie was there and stomped down hard on the hapless machine. It gave more resistance than the bike, and she drove the leg down again and again like a piston, demolishing the target beyond recognition. Again, she felt the feedback vibrate up her leg, and again, it was satisfying. I'm getting good at this, she thought, rotating her torso to scan for targets.
Good kill, Zed, Rome complimented from his war machine. I think we got them all here.
Good kills yourself, Charles, she replied, a feral grin on her face. We need to keep moving, don't you think?
Agreed.
Blake switched nets. The squad sent their sit reps in. First squad had been hit hard, with one dead and one wounded. Second squad was currently unscathed, though if they kept going at this pace, Blake knew it wouldn't be long until every squad was mangled beyond recognition. Third squad was recovering from the shock of losing Nito and had managed to take down the rogue bike between them. It wasn't ideal, but it would do. She reported the situation back to Sector Command. Comms were getting clearer now as they reduced the distance. Blake switched to her command net once again.
Second squad, lead on.
Roger that, boss, said Corporal Morante, a hint of tiredness in her voice. The patrol had been testing for everyone, but they were on the home straight now. With only about a mile to go, Blake followed on at a slow pace, remaining vigilant. There would be some serious questions getting raised once they were back in,